It's 4:30 and this is KDNK, and welcome to Valley Voices. I'm Amy Haddon Marsh, your host. And today we're going to be talking about wild horses and burros. The 2018 federal budget allocates $1.1 billion to the Bureau of Land Management, which is about a little over $160 million reduction from this year. This translates to a $70 million budget for the Wild Horse and Burro Program, and that's about $10 million less than it was this year. The budget proposal also recommends elimination of all appropriations language that keeps the agency from using all options to manage the herds. We'll talk about this in detail in a few minutes, but this suggests that thousands of horses and burros in long-term holding pastures will be killed or sold to slaughter. This isn't a new idea, but it's taken on a new twist. And with me today by phone to talk about this is Ginger Catherines, award-winning filmmaker, director of the Cloud Foundation, a wild horse advocacy and education nonprofit, and a member of the BLM's Wild Horse and Burro Advisory Board, which makes recommendations to the agency about Mustang and Burro management. Welcome back to the program, Ginger. It's great to have you here.
Oh, thanks, Amy. It's great to be here.
Yeah. So how are you?
I'm good. I just came back from a wonderful trip where I spent 5 days in the Pryor Mountains with Cloud's relatives in that beautiful scenic place with snow on the mountain and green grass and spectacular. And then on the way back here to Colorado, I stopped at the what's called the Red Desert Complex southwest of Casper, north of Rawlins, and gee, what beautiful horses they have up there. That area of south central Wyoming, I mean, that just has to be horse heaven.
Really?
And the horses were fat and happy, and it was just a wonderful experience to be able to photograph them in that beautiful natural environment.
Well, give us a brief history and background on the Cloud Foundation for people who might not be familiar with it.
Well, the Cloud Foundation is named for Cloud, and he is a Palomino horse that I documented throughout the course of his entire life. He was born in 1995, May 29th, and I was lucky enough to create three documentaries for the PBS Nature series about this one wild horse throughout his entire life. And so that has drawn comparison with Jane Goodall's experience with chimpanzees. But when they opened their world to me, they educated me about what it means to be a wild horse and their complex and interesting social structure, and which is unique to all of our hoofed animals. And I was just blown away by what I was learning, feeling, seeing, and was lucky enough to bring that to a U.S. audience and to audiences around the world.
Right, and the films are wonderful for anybody who hasn't seen them. They're available at the library, too, but people can purchase those at your website, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, and I've written three books about Cloud, and we have other Cloud-related stuff. Mm-hmm. and Briar, I'm going to Briarfest next month, and that's in Lexington, Kentucky, Kentucky Horse Park. And that's the 14th through the 16th of July. Wonderful event. Mm-hmm. But Briar's been kind enough to do models of Cloud when he was a young stallion, and then Cloud's Legacy, which goes along with the second program, and then most recently, Cloud's daughter, Encore. It's called Cloud's Encore.
Oh, wonderful.
And she's a pale Palomino like her dad, even whiter than her father.
Wow.
But she's a beauty. We would love to be... We're shooting a new program now, whether we can get a contract to actually produce it, but we've been filming her since the day she was born.
Oh, great. That's wonderful. Would love to talk about some of the, would like to spend the half hour talking about all the wonderful things about wild horses, but we've got some issues coming up. And before we talk about them, you were appointed to the BLM's Wild Horse and Burro Advisory Board, what, in 2015? Is that right?
2016.
And in my mind, I may be wrong, but you're the first wild horse and burro advocate to get a seat on that board. And talk about what the board does.
Well, the board doesn't do anything now because when the new administration came in and when Secretary Zinke was appointed Secretary of the Interior, all of the boards were disbanded.
That's
so
right.
All of the resource advisory councils like we have in Colorado and various areas of the state, those are no longer meeting. The National Wild Horse and Burro Advisory Board that I serve on is no longer meeting. Now, whether we start back up in the fall, we're hopeful that we're not just totally passe, because it's a way for us to get together and try to knock out solutions to what are perceived problems, or to change the way that we're doing things when it's not working, which certainly is the case with the Wild Horse and Burro program. It's been broken for decades, and getting the ship to turn slowly toward a different direction is difficult.
Yeah, it's like turning the wheel on the Titanic. Well, I'm wondering, I forgot about how the boards were disbanded, so I'm a little rattled by that. And I guess I'm wondering, was your experience as a board member, did that meet your expectations?
Well, I was very proud and pleased to be asked to serve. It was a surprise to me because I have been a critic of the way that things are going. I was surprised last fall when the board voted to kill the horses in holding.
Right.
And I was the lone nay voice among those nine participants.
Right.
I guess there were eight. There was one person that was not present. But that was a real shocker. But very, very quickly, the BLM said, we don't want anything to do with that. We don't want to do that. And That head of the BLM, of course, is no longer there. In fact, we don't have a real BLM director. We have an interim.
An acting director, right.
Acting director, correct.
Well, that's the twist that I mentioned at the top of the show, is that the Wild Horse and Burro Advisory Board voted to recommend euthanization or sale without stipulation of the, 40? Are there really 45,000 horses in holding?
Well, according to my list, there's 43,500 horses in both short-term holding and long-term holding.
Okay.
The majority of those animals are in long-term holding, so they're on pastures. They're not in dirt corrals.
Well, I want to unpack this just a little bit before we talk about the current budget proposal. So, first of all, can you briefly explain what short and long-term holding, what are those?
Well, the short-term holding facilities are usually for younger animals whom they consider to be adoptable, 6 and under, mostly 5 and under, I believe. So those horses are awaiting adoption. The long-term holding horses are generally older, and they feel that they're unadoptable, and so they are living out their lives in pastures. Now, they are non-reproducing, of course, because all the males have been gelded.
Right, they're all gelded. And this is costing... This takes up about...
The majority of the money. The majority of the budget is spent on this. And so that's why I say, you know, we just have to come up with different solutions that obviously don't include killing the animals.
Well, we know what euthanization is. It's a euphemism for killing them. But what... When you know, the newspaper articles and everything talk about selling the animals without stipulation. And for someone who's not... cognizant of BLM speak or the Wild Horse and Burro program, can you talk about what that means?
That means that the Tom Davises of the world could buy as many horses as they want, and those horses would likely then be sold to Mexican slaughter plants or Canadian slaughter plants.
Okay.
And so that you can make a pretty good living doing that. Mm-hmm. Tom Davis is a rancher and really is a horse trader and has done buying at auctions, and horses that he has bought have ended up going to slaughter. But in this case, Tom Davis was given the opportunity to purchase for $25 each.
No, it was $10
horse.
Each.
Was it $10?
Yeah.
Yeah, you're right.
Uh-huh.
I was going to say it was free, but I guess it's about as close to free as it can get.
Exactly.
$10 a piece, that's right. And the government even paid to do some of the hauling.
Right. It costs taxpayers from what I've read, $140,000 to haul those horses to La Jara, Colorado, which is where he lives, and it cost him $10 per horse, and he got, like, I don't know, between 1,400 and 1,800 Mustangs. So
he got, yeah, just short of 1,800.
Oh, okay.
And that just shows you what a broken program this is. But I think, and we'll, you can tell me if you want to go there, but I think the solutions to this must be to manage the animals on the land that they're supposed to be roaming.
Right. And I do want to go to solutions, but I want to talk about the threats a little bit. But, well, I don't know. Maybe we should, because I wanted to know why. My next question is, why did you vote? You were the only dissenting vote when the board voted to recommend euthanization or sale without stipulation. So why did you vote against that?
Well, I don't believe that you kill healthy animals. You know, euthanasia is mercy killing, so it's an animal in distress with very poor prognosis of having any quality of life or being able to, you know, being in pain and suffering. There's nothing wrong with these horses. They're healthy animals. They've just been put into jail, and I don't think that they should be killed.
Right. Okay. You know, and we will get to solutions, I promise, because that's key for this broken program, and I think it's really important for people to know that, you know, the Bureau of Land Management and the people who support this program just seem to go around and around and around the same way of managing these animals, which has proven for the past 40 years to be ineffective and very expensive. But, you know, Ben Masters is also on the advisory, or was also on the advisory board. And people may be familiar with his film that included wild horses called Unbranded. Now, he was one of the people who voted, well, everybody else on the board besides you voted in favor of the recommendation to euthanize the horses in holding or sell them without stipulation. And that was surprising to me. And, you know, I want to talk about why he says he did it, at least from what I've read. And just a summary of that is that it was kind of, he thought it might be a red flag. You know, if we recommend that these horses be euthanized, maybe the agency will wake up or the public will wake up and realize that the program is in trouble. But to my way of thinking, it backfired.
Well, in my way of thinking, you don't serve on a national board and fool around like this. I mean, you don't vote for something or make a statement to make a statement. I mean, ranchers and who are public lands ranchers and others who inherently don't like wild horses, I mean, just glommed onto that and said, see, you know,
right.
This is what should happen. So I don't necessarily think that that's the reason they voted that way. But it's a pretty poor way to serve on a national board when you try to make statements and you're not really serious about the recommendations that you make.
Well, it seems to me that recommendation is now carrying a whole lot of weight. That's that's the twist I'm talking about. And before I, you know, get into the budget and all of that, I just want to let listeners know it's just about 4:45, and I'm talking with Ginger Catherines today by phone. Ginger is an award-winning filmmaker and director of the Cloud Foundation, which is a wild horse advocacy and education nonprofit in Colorado Springs, and she was also a member of the BLM's Wild Horse and Burro Advisory Board before all boards were disbanded earlier this year. You know, Ginger, you mentioned something about Interior Secretary Zinke and some of the things that he was talking about today. Can you talk about that?
Well, he was testifying before a Senate subcommittee, Natural Resources, I believe, and the clip with the secretary that we will very shortly today have on our website is Congressman Stewart from Utah, who is questioning the secretary, holding up pictures of dead horses laying at the edges of fences and saying, see, this is awful, this is what is happening. And the secretary didn't even I mean, he clearly was out of his element, but he was going right along with Congressman Stewart about the fact that the horses are in distress, they're starving on the range, the forage, they're destructive of the forage, which Stewart was cued him on, and he went right down that lane, even though it's nothing, it can be farther from the truth. It's disturbing when people either are not informed or don't care about the truth, and then they jump to lethal conclusions. It's very disturbing.
Well, you said that the range in Wyoming and on the prior range this year is in really good shape, and I'd like for you to talk briefly about other uses of the range. I mean, cattle grazing is a big use of the range where wild horses are. Can you, I mean, without going into the whole history of it, can you maybe give a few bullet points about what some of the conflicts are between livestock grazers and wild horses?
Well, there's a direct conflict because livestock eat forage on the range and horses eat forage on the range. But there's about, you know, 1 million to 2 million head of cattle on western ranges, and there are, according to the BLM, 73,000 wild horses. So just by virtue of comparison here, who does the damage? And
right.
Just by the sheer numbers, you would point to the cattle. But it's not just the numbers. It's the way livestock use the range, and I mean cattle.
Mm-hmm.
They hang out at riparian and water sources. They lay down. They chew their cuds. They. This is no downer on cattle. That's just what they are. It's
mm-hmm.
not their fault.
Mm-hmm.
They need that time to digest their food.
Mm-hmm.
And so they lay around a lot. They're not very long-legged. They don't go very far away from the water. And so they do a lot of damage. The horse, in comparison, has to move to digest its food,
mm-hmm.
passes through their digestive system very quickly. They go to water. They generally drink band after band, and then they leave, and they can walk, 20 miles
mm-hmm.
easily
right.
in a day,
right.
where the cattle are are very sedentary. So just the way those two species use the land are very,
mm-hmm.
very different.
Plus the BLM, and even though, especially with the 2018 budget proposal, the resources for range management are shrinking. And, including allotment monitoring, according to the BLM's information on the 2018 budget. And
mm-hmm.
and the range management for wild horses and burros has been, I'm not going to say completely non-existent, but somewhat non-existent. And so, you were talking about solutions. And, I'm thinking that, I guess part of my frustration with this, with the conversations that I read about in the media and the whole program, is that it always comes back to the same polarized conversation. It's the cattle, it's the horses, it's the cattle, it's the horses. And, I'm wondering if your solutions include proper range management for these horses.
Well, sure. I mean, without the land, you don't have anything. You don't have healthy populations of wildlife. I mean, when we were just in the Wyoming herds, and this is, by the way, horse heaven in this area of the Red Desert, where they want to remove over 2,000 animals, leaving just a token on 750,000 acres. Where you run into problems is that the numbers of horses that are left on the range after you have these massive removals start to reproduce at a faster rate.
Yes. Talk about that.
That's called compensatory reproduction, any species will respond in this way. When your populations are underpopulated and you could die out, then you have more young. And this is why killing coyotes has been so incredibly misguided, mm-hmm. because the more coyotes you kill, the more you have.
Exactly.
They just have bigger litters more frequently.
So you're saying that
wild horses, they have responded in kind with more foals than historically they would normally be having.
As a result of roundups?
As a result of bringing their populations down through roundups and mm-hmm. removals and warehousing, you leave very few animals on the range, and they are going to respond in that way. And this isn't just Ginger talking. This is the National Academies of Science who came up with this. And it was a million-dollar study that the BLM commissioned several years ago, and it had some pretty clear directives for how to change the management, which BLM totally ignored.
Right.
And that is the use of available fertility agents that are safe and effective, and they should begin doing this now. Now, that was, what, 3 or 4 years ago mm-hmm. this report came out.
Mm-hmm.
BLM didn't do that. In fact, the fertility management category, which goes under range monitoring, is not even one. It doesn't even show up. It shows up as zero on mm-hmm. my pie chart.
Mm-hmm. Right, and it's going to get, well, it's going to be less than zero if this budget is proposed, because the budget proposes for the BLM to cut back on birth control and cut back on roundups and sort of cut back on everything. But and we just have a few minutes left, but in the budget, there's some language that to me is a little frightening, because it calls for, and this is a little weedy, but I think it's significant, because it calls for the elimination of the appropriations language that has kept the BLM from doing its work. And that means basically funding for selling animals without stipulation, and it could also mean making funding available for euthanization. Am I on the right track with that?
Yeah, other than your word euthanize, I think you're right on target. I think that the BLM began in 2008 with secret meetings on how to kill the horses in holding and how many they can do a year. At that time, they said 1,000 a year, and how are we going to get around clean water standards and body disposal, and how many psychologists would we
exactly.
have to have, because our employees are going to be asked to kill healthy animals.
Mm-hmm.
So we're back to 2008 there. This is on a grander scale, I believe, now, because they have warehoused so many animals. Mm-hmm. But part of the solution to this, and not only, of course, is limiting the reproduction on the range
right.
to the mortality, but it is also taking the short-term horses, there's about 18,000 of them, and putting them back on some of the 20 million acres that has been taken away from wild horse use mm-hmm. that was supposed to be wild horse country.
Mm-hmm.
So you could empty the short-term of geldings in a big hurry, because geldings could be put anywhere where you even have maybe some remnant wild horses mm-hmm. because they can't
right.
procreate.
Right.
That's an immediate way to get the strain off of the budget of short-term holding. When I have proposed that, it has been shockingly ignored
hmm.
by the director mm-hmm. of the Wild Horse and Burro Program. I'm not sure why, but probably because the horses were removed to start with so that the livestock could mm-hmm. have forage.
Right. Or energy production.
Or energy production.
Well, we have about a minute and a half, believe it or not. I could talk
oh,
about
no.
this all
wow,
day.
Oh, wow, that flew by.
I know, it flew by. It just flew by. And I guess, you know, there's one other question I want to ask, but it's about the Laura Lee, who has the blog Wild Horse Education, wants to repeal the 2005 Burns Amendment. We don't have enough time for that. But do you honestly, Ginger Catherine, think that the Bureau of Land Management would kill thousands of horses in holding, and if so, how do you think they'd do it?
I don't know how they do it. I do believe they are planning to do it. And I know it's horrifying to think about, but if you turn your back on this and just say, no way, that won't happen, mm-hmm. I think it definitely can. I would invite people to try to go to our Cloud Foundation website mm-hmm. and Cloud the Stallion Facebook page, because within the next day or two, we're putting out a document which is an on-the-range guide to management,
great.
Which we have created with the help of BLM.
Oh, great.
And it is a way forward, a way to get volunteers involved, so people out there that are interested in working on this project don't have to be on the range. You can be sitting behind your computer, but there's a lot of things that volunteers can do, and it's time that we step up and participate in this. This is the counter, I guess, this is the point counterpoint. This is the counterpoint, direct, diametrically opposed to being cruel and inhumane. This is the humane way forward, and we hope people will join us.
And that's thecloudfoundation.org?
That is correct.
Well, Ginger Catherines, unfortunately, we're going to have to leave it there. I really appreciate you taking the time to talk with us. Here on KDNK, and thanks very much for your decades and decades of of work to protect wild horses and burros. Thanks a lot.
Well, thanks, Amy, for allowing me to participate.
All right. Take care.
Okay, you too.
You've been listening to Valley Voices and a conversation with Ginger Catherines. That website, again, is thecloudfoundation.org. Stay tuned for Pulse of the Planet and KDNK Local News and NPR coming right up. Thanks for listening.